Good afternoon. I'd like to call our board discussion session to order. This is a wonderful opportunity for us. It is October 8th, 1 o'clock, and this is our regular monthly discussion, so I'm very pleased that we're able to do this. It is what was formerly known as a round table. But our format is very much the same as what our old round table was. This will be audio recorded and available, and we will get started. Let me first say that after checking with Ms. Disney, who had an issue on the had an item on the agenda, we do have the privilege today of having Richard Trussell with us, so we appreciate that very much. And let me tell you, I appreciate him being here. Also, I wanted to let my fellow board members know that Ms. Stank is very good when I was on vacation. She called on a couple of things that she really needed an answer to, so I appreciated that. And one of them was regarding the building space for school board members. And she wanted to know if it wouldn't work for the board members to meet individually with Mr. Trussell, and I said it was at the pleasure of the board. However, I feel as though it is important that we meet in the sunshine. I think all of us have experienced those individual meetings with members of staff or others, and it is not productive, in my opinion. So you're welcome to meet with him individually after this if you want to, but I wanted to let you know that this was my call, so I made it, and I feel sunshine is important. And I don't have anything that I intend to tell him that I won't tell him in the public eye. So that being said, thank you for being here. Now you need to get our discussion started.
Well, maybe I can start by what we've been doing since the last meeting. Carter talked about that funnel and where we are and trying to get closer and closer. And if you recall, we were using a per square foot number per employee, not knowing what levels they were or anything. So we've taken some time to meet with each department to talk about their staffing levels, what their actual levels were, what represents an office, what doesn't represent an office, how to take all of those employees and fit them in within a DOE framework of what they believe your spaces should be size-wise. You know, they do two things. They tell you, based on a number of students, you should have this many total square feet. They also say, you know, for these 10 positions, we think you should have a number of about this size of a room. So, of course, in just about every case, no one's actual title matches one of the DOE names. So we try to sit down and understand what every department has in terms of levels and what they are. And in some cases, somebody may be at a lower level, but however has some confidentiality issues and requires an office. And so what we've been doing is taking all of those by department. I met with the last department this morning, HR, and we're going to convert those into actual needs and spaces to come back to a program, to come back and verify the kind of 39,500 square feet that we used the last time and make sure that that's actually applicable. To talk about shared uses in some of the departments, we've talked about conference spaces that could be shared, conference spaces that can't be shared, file rooms that can or can't, break areas and whether or not, you know, some of them could be shared and what the philosophy might be, and really just to take the next step down that funnel to try and figure out how true the 39,000 square feet is. In doing so, we also met with Dr. Adams about the superintendent's office and the support personnel needs. And I met with Judy for a little bit separately and at the same time with the superintendent's group about what the board needs may be. I'm familiar with what your current spaces are. But like in the case of every department, the idea has been, let's talk about what you need. And we can use what you have as a frame of reference, but let's not redesign what we have unless that's appropriate. So you, frankly, are the last group that in a sense, I have not spoken to, you know, and little things like whether you guys are okay in a situation where you are now where your offices are kind of shared, do they need to be separate, more private, not private. So the one thing I don't have in all of this, and I was hoping to hear, is a little bit of that, you know, how you perceive you guys interacting and what you thought your needs were. I have Judy's part of that covered, but not you as individual board members.
Okay. Thank you very much. Board members, comments, please. Ms. Disney?
Sure. Thanks for being here. I really appreciate you coming out. The space we have right now is not efficient, I don't believe, for the five board members. We don't all need space in here, as you know, as you can see by, we don't all work in the office. But I feel like I need space because geographically I live very far away. I'm over 25 miles away from here. So meeting folks out at my home or in my neighborhood, this isn't a very practical idea. I have used other public spaces to meet constituents and parents. I can't always be afforded privacy, though, when I meet in public places like libraries. Also, I find the need to refer to some documents that I have in my office. We're keeping fewer and fewer paper documents because we have created a number of sites that are accessible via the website. However, they're not all there yet. building documents, for instance, you know, with our blueprints, you know, that's just not something we can access digitally. Confidential documents, it's important that we have a locked space to put some things that are confidential away. We do return them to the board secretary when we're finished with them, but while we're working with them, we need to have a locked space to store them. And I know I share my space with other elected officials. I've given, when I meet with Congressman Posey or Senator Negron, I've extended my taxpayer-paid space to them in the event that they needed to meet someone in this area. Because I feel like if the taxpayers are paying for it, then it is more or less a space that I need to share. We do not have a lot of privacy where we are now. We can hear one another's conversations, and we have to try very deliberately to not hear them. So I think that is probably problematic. And I do not object to having just a desk and a file cabinet and then one private meeting space that we could all share if we had someone come in. I don't necessarily need my own door, but I do feel that we need some private space and a locked cabinet.
Ms. Simmons, you have any? You have no opinion?
Are there
well, any? I mean, I'm interested. I'm the exact opposite situation as Karen, because I literally do not need an office. I need a mailbox for Judy to put stuff in. Because if I have a fully staffed and fully functioning office, a rock's throw from here. I mean, I could be there in a minute and a half. And so I do all my everything from returning phone calls to writing letters to everything at my office. Because I got Jennifer and Brittany there to, you know, do all the grunt work for me. So I haven't sat at that desk in I don't know how long. I keep trying to get Bruce Green to come get that computer.
Okay.
Yeah, I finally got him to take my laptop because I wasn't using it. I don't need an office at all. But I'm in a much different situation than Karen's in.
Ms. Jimenez.
Yeah, and I think it's important to remember that these offices are not for any individual board member's convenience or not. I think we have to be mindful that we are not in these positions forever, and we need to plan with a vision if we continue to have school boards. That there is an adequate space for whoever is in the position. It's not about us individually. It's about, is there a need for a designated space? And if not, then it should not be included in the facility. And if there is, we should talk about what is the most, you know, expedient, least wasteful use of space.
And
that was a good point. I was just speaking for my individual situation.
And that's what we all do.
Yeah.
That's all we want.
As I spoke with Dr. Adams when we were talking about getting some information, unlike our facility at 66th Avenue, we don't need individual personalities involved in the setup. We have some spaces out there that, you know, at the time, that's how it was done, but it has been detrimental to the use of that facility, and some of it has been quite wasteful, in fact. So, wasn't there. had nothing to do with it. I'm just saying that moving forward, it does need to be, as I stated previously, and Ms. Jimenez just stated, we are not going to be here forever, despite what we may think. We're not going to be here forever. Hopefully, if indeed we move forward with a building, that hasn't been decided yet, but you need to have something to work from. We cannot ask you to give us a pie-in-the-sky figure based on number of people and current square footage, because that doesn't work. If you look at the amount of unused space, if you took all of it in the halls, we could probably have another couple, three offices. That being said, I think it is very important, especially moving forward, with so many of the conflicts that we are experiencing, so much of the input that we're getting, which is good in this community, from community members and individuals. I believe we do need to have a space that is our own. I don't care if it is just big enough for a desk, a file cabinet, and a chair and a door. We do need to have those individual spaces. I'm very fortunate. Mr. McCain and I share, as you know, an open space. You've been in that office. An open space. Ms. Disney has been always very gracious to let me know that her office is available to me anytime I need it. But I also have the availability of, I have access, a key, to a very tiny office space at the old courthouse downtown, which is, again, a rock's throw away. So I have been using that. I've used it. I will be using it three times this week to meet with individuals rather than here in this office. And there, I respect people when they want to meet with you and they do not want to meet in the district office. I think that at least one of those three, if it was not an area where mine is, where it was so open to everybody, I think they probably would agree to meet here. I just think it's important that we have that. It doesn't need to be anything big. We don't need to do what the county commission did years ago, and the chairman always has a bigger space. That's ridiculous to keep. But if you're there for 4 years, you should be able to sit in the same office. No office should be bigger than anybody else's. I do think that one of the most important things is to have, she's closer than she was, thank you, Dr. Addis, for staying, closer than she was, but I think we need more ready access to Ms. Stang. I think if it was something that, you know, if we had a hub and our four offices or however it needs to be set up, she certainly needs bigger space, and I'm sure she's told you that, than what we would be needing as individuals. I think it's also important that we be able to, Dr. Adams' office has, and Ms. Stang's also, I think, has duplicate keys to, I do have a locked area, because my area quite often is not one where you, I mean, I don't want to say there's no privacy there, but it's not isolated. You can't close a door and have a phone conversation. So I think that's very important. And the fact that Mr. McCain's not there has nothing to do with it. It's still an area where if you walk by and I need to have a private conversation, there's no door to close except the door to the office. That being said, I'm talking about efficiency of how the office needs to be set up. I also think that we're going to be able to, you know, we're going to make our plans based on what our current, hopefully, state-of-the-art, phrase not used anymore, but the technology that we have. But I think we also need to plan for a very different world than for the next 50 years from that building. And so I don't think we want to limit ourselves. But I don't think there's any elected official who needs to have 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. If you have that much time on your hands, you need to find something else to do besides be a school board member. Go volunteer somewhere, because that's not your role as a school board member. So those are my thoughts. Again, I don't think any of it should be personality specific. It should be best practice with, again, the opportunity for everybody to have a private office, because there are times we all need that. We all need that. And, you know, pretty much everything we do should be open, just like this discussion. But there are times when you have something that is sensitive to somebody else, and you need to be respectful of that and allow them that opportunity to not have exposure to everyone just because they're sitting in your office. I don't think that's fair. But for efficiency for Ms. Stang, for her to serve us best, she has to have an area that's efficient. And we've kind of piecemealed her ever since I've been here. We really have. We've kind of kind of piecemealed her, and I think it's time for that position, not Ms. Fang, but her position, to have a more efficient area. I mean, to get to certain files, she has to go to a completely different locked closet. That makes no sense to me whatsoever. And she is the gatekeeper. She, that position, is a gatekeeper for many very important historical documents for this organization. And so that responsibility, we need to provide her the tools she needs to keep those things safe for perpetuity, in perpetuity. I really believe that. Don't care what color it is.
Understood.
Ben?
Yeah, moving beyond the board members' offices, has any thought been given in terms of the boardroom, since the county commission building also is a taxpayer dollar funded building, of sharing their meeting space? We've had meetings there when we have overflow of participants at our board meeting, and that would save a lot of square footage to share space. I mean, there's so many places in this community where there are a lot of spaces, and there are a lot of places that are close to where we are now, which would not obviously be close to the building that is out by Storm Grove. But is that is that an option? Is that, another way of looking at this and reducing expenses when there's already space that can be used?
Well, prior to Dr. Adams becoming superintendent, I had broached the subject many times with County Commission. Could we use that space on a regular basis? Because frequently this room was not large enough, and just any number of problems. And they were not...
they were not amenable.
Yeah. They were disinclined to acquiesce to our requests.
Can I speak to that as well? And I think Renee can elaborate on it. One of the issues that we have is space. This is kind of our biggest room to be able to have workshops and so on. And so even finding in the community. So one of the things that, and we might have even mentioned that we would like to consider for the boardroom, is to have a dais, but to have a very large, as larger space.
Yeah, if you take, and I know exactly what you, this may be what you mean, but, we've talked about a boardroom and needing to be X size, but it seems like the boardroom is really a teacher area that is sometimes a boardroom. And so I think maybe if this was the only thing that happened in here, I would be telling you exactly the same thing. Wow, this is a big room for that little use. However, having met with some of the other departments about the number of people that they want to put in training situations, I think what you actually have is the other situation. You have a training center that you're going to use as a boardroom.
That's right.
And so if you took this space out, then you'd really leave a hole in the training side of that. So what we've been talking about, and I'm only on the program side at this point, but is creating a space large enough that could be divided. I know I've had discussions with some of the departments about how many people and exactly what kind of configuration they'd like to set up, so that perhaps just that broke off and this was a large space, or that broke off and this broke off into two, so that they could have multiple training going on. So this may be a case where your perceived empty space here is really not the board use. The board use is secondary to your teacher education kind of use.
Well, I agree. I think that this room gets a whole lot more use by other people than it does by the board. But this whole business here has just got to be fixed. Mm-hmm. Perhaps with, movie walls or something, where you could expand the space if we had a large group coming, or make it smaller if we didn't. And that way you'd have more than one space for training.
And if you look at some of the other similar spaces, boardrooms at other school districts, one of the things that strikes me is that you never have that.
Right.
You have fixed. The board, mm-hmm. and then you have tables in front mm-hmm. that are staff at an executive level that go away as a table, mm-hmm. so that really all you have fixed is the actual board side. So that lends itself to having a larger room. That lends itself to having a room that can be divided. And what we're talking about in concept is like what you'd see at a hotel, where they can take their boardrooms and you know, create multiple ones and separate ones. And we've even talked that we've even gone as far as having conversations about how soundproof they are. If you've been to a hotel, you know that a conference room movable wall is not soundproof. I always say that to people. There isn't a soundproof. A soundproof is only a music room. The rest of the time we design around trying to either muffle sound or not be able to make the sound something you understand. So they'll be set up in such a way where they could have multiple functions going on, multiple training sessions going on. But yes, it'll be done in a way where the board function being secondary is not the reason you can't use the space the way you want to use it.
And I think, too, if you look at, and you probably, there's no reason you would be familiar with any New River State College in the Mueller campus, but the Richardson Center is a prime example of that. That was built quite some time ago. And you can have a huge community gathering there with tables and dinner and the whole, all of that. You can also have a huge gathering with just chairs. And there, even though there are small meeting rooms along the one side, you can also partition that room off. For several different, you can have your meeting and then partition off for several different group sessions going on. It does work very well. Is it soundproof? Absolutely not. But unless you're somebody who is a stand up on the top of the table and scream at the top of your lungs to get somebody's attention, if that's your style of presentation, you don't want to be in a room next to that fellow man. It's always a fellow man. And
you can look at his body, not me.
And I think that is doable? Absolutely. I've been to many, many things out there in the 10, 12 years that it's been there in all different kinds of settings. And it is a functioning area. There are, I believe there are four small meeting rooms on the side. And they also have the technology in place that whatever you do in those four small rooms, when you go back and gather in the front room, you can pull it right up, and that technology is there. At the time, it was very, very up to them. It was actually ahead of what the curve was. And for this to be used the way it's been used, again, we have made do with what we've had. And I think in the last 7 years, I think we've had one time when this room was booked for something else, and we decided that the group that was needed to be here was larger than ours. So we took our meeting, I think, to the personnel conference room or whatever it was. It was tight. I remember it was a tight fit, but we made that work. And that's because our staff has made it work. It's because those people, and we were more than willing to do that. But I understand what Ms. Jimenez is saying about trying to use that, but I will tell you that when in discussions with both Mr. Keating and Mr. Baird back when we were looking at possibly using some build-out space, unused space that the county has up there, one of the things that we got into was the discussion of joint use of some of their meeting rooms. There's a couple when you first walk in that aren't always used. There's a couple in planning that aren't always used. The general county commission room itself, you never know what their meetings are going to be. That's the problem. If our meeting is at night, that's fine. But they have sometimes their meetings go all day and they would interfere with us being able to get our business done in the evening. So, and we can't, that's not something they're willing to do. They've been generous with us when we have had overflow meetings, and they have allowed us at no charge to use the facility. But they made it very clear if we wanted to do it on a more permanent basis, it doesn't matter which taxpayer, it is their budget that has to pay for the air conditioner and the security and all of those and all of that. That comes out of the county commission budget. So there would definitely be charges to us. And that's about as far as we got, I think, with that discussion in 2008 or whatever.
And, there are ways to be prudent with your square footage that are outside of your control, like sharing offices. And then there are ways to be prudent with your square footage that you control. And I'll give you an example of some of the conversations that are already been had, and that conference spaces for the different departments. and the fact that we possibly don't need the same kind of conference space at every department, or that they have actually individual needs that are different. But when I was speaking to Mr. Green, Bruce, you know, one of the things he was talking about was setting it up in such a way where on your computer all your conference rooms would be listed, and you would simply book a room for a particular time. That's one of the ways that if you were looking at this from a corporate standpoint, they would maximize the use of their space by creating the kind of spaces you need, which may be that you need a conference room for 20, you need a conference room for 12, you need a conference room for 6, and another one for 8. And different people are checking out those, as opposed to every department at some point puts all of their people in a conference room, so you really don't want to build 6, 20 people rooms. And so some of that is already happening in this discussion. I guess I'm just sharing that so that, you know, I know you haven't been with me in all these things. So we're talking about, like Mr. Morrison talked to me about, you know, we could share our conference rooms a certain amount of time, to have those conversations with curriculum, I've had them with Bruce. And so some of that maximizing is happening internally, much the way that we talked about subdividing the boardroom for teacher training. I guess I just wanted to share with you that is occurring.
Well, just I'm sure you've already thought of it, but from the security standpoint, having an escape hatch for the board. We've only needed it once since we've been here, but it was pretty scary. You know,
what happened? Come out.
I had my car key.
Yes.
That when they were painted in.
Yeah.
It was just there was. Yeah. It was pretty aggressive.
Oh, I didn't say that. Oh,
yeah.
I had to sneak out back.
Well, our world, I think that, I don't think that's being alarmist at all. I think that's the reality of where we are. That's the reality of where we are right now. I will say, and I apologize, Dr. Adams, because I haven't mentioned this to you before, but I know we want to incorporate some additional departments for better efficiency. As a board, I think the entire board will want to look at some of those requests. Again, I mean, as far as square footage, and I'm not a numbers person. Mr. McCain will tell you that with capital letters. That is not my area of expertise. I'm not sure what it is at the moment, but it's not my area of expertise. But I do think that there's perhaps some things moving forward where we need to be a little more cautious. I understand when the economy was entirely different when the county commission built the type of building they built and the square footage they built. But when you go into some of those departments, I think many of the department heads will be the first to say, some of those waiting areas, some of those reception areas, some of those areas actually are just beyond any probable use. And I do know that at least one department head over there who shared with me that, you know, it's unfortunate his department had to be cut back so much because he actually could take some of his reception area and put in probably a couple of offices and still have quite an efficient reception area. So I just want us to be careful with that. I am extremely pleased that you're having those discussions already on every department having a conference room and conference rooms being the same sizes. You know, we already have that now. We have the small conference room, we have the instructional conference room, we have those kinds of things to accommodate different size and groups, and so that's good. But I know that this was the best guesstimate of the amount of square footage we're going to be needing based on what we hope to incorporate. But efficiency of space, I think maybe needs to have a second look. If you just, as I said, if you look at our square footage here, we could probably accommodate at least two more offices if it was configured differently and we didn't have these huge wide hallways that we're now using as copy rooms and copy spaces and those kinds of things. So
I would say on behalf of the staff is that I think they're all looking very smartly and efficiently at space, you know. Based on the conversation that you've had with me,
absolutely, everybody has come to me with honestly not what typically happens. Everybody has come to me with a mind towards how can we make this more efficient, and it has been very simple from that standpoint. Now at some point I've got to turn all this back into DOE speak over here and make sure that they fall within their levels, but I can assure you that people have talked to me about what exactly they need as opposed to what they'd like to have. And even when we've asked those questions, you know, there's been a lot of, well, you know, if we did this, we may not need this. And I'll give you a perfect example. This morning we got into a conversation about personnel record storage in HR and the room that they have and not being sufficient. And then they were, and that assistant superintendent was talking about, but if we move forward with the digital record keeping that we have, we can make this room smaller. And so there's been an awful lot of that from everybody involved.
Well, and I was not saying that we're doing anything grandiose, but I think the focus of this board from our initial discussions and moving forward is that it's been, we do not want to borrow any money to make this happen. That will be the gate closer. It's just not going to happen. We don't want to be foolish and not provide for the future for 50 years, but I think we're seeing that we're able to compartmentalize where we hadn't been able to do that in the past. We absolutely would have had to add portables or something outside if we still were operating the way we were 10, 15 years ago, because we don't have the efficiency of the technology. We didn't have it 15 years ago, but we have now. But I do throw that cautionary out there, and I'm very happy to hear that. So I know that 39.5 is a figure that I think has been quoted numerous times. Is that right?
And that number, you know, just to recap, was we did some research into what corporations are using per employees. That number, most of the data will show you that as 3 or 4 years ago, that number was in the 200s per square feet per employee.
Right.
But that the trend is actually downward, and some of the numbers that they're actually quoting are in the 150s. We figured that, you know, I'm trying to be as good as I can with the information that I gave you all, and at the same time, not create any unintended consequences by starting out too low until we actually have these conversations. So the 39.5 represented that, plus, you know, in that number, you have to, that represents net square footage for an employee. So you still have bathrooms, you still have mechanical spaces, you still have circulations, which typically represents a third. So I want to make sure that somebody doesn't do the math backwards and say 39.5 divided by 175 is 500 employees.
Already heard it. That's
not really the case. The idea is 39.5, of which two-thirds are actually net square footage because a third is going to those other things, then divided by 175. And then that 175 is not just the employee. That 175 includes things like conference rooms, storage rooms, any break or copy or work production space that comes with that. So what you're actually going to see towards the end is you're going to see a lot of people who are really hovering around 100 square feet or 60 square feet, but you have to get those conference rooms from somewhere, you have to get those other spaces from somewhere. So that's the danger, obviously, with giving any kind of number, but I know that as you guys make decisions, you need to have better and better information, and so we're trying to get to that.
And that's the same thing they do with the budget. They take the number of children and divide it into the total of our budget every year, and they come up with what would be a nice operating figure for us to use for our students, but that's not the reality of what's there. So, additional comments regarding board space or anything else on?
I've been noticing the trend that with our newer administrators having tables that have big desks. So right there, you've created a space to have meetings in your office and needing less square footage to accommodate your work needs. So, you know, that's attractive to me as well, to not have that huge space for a desk, but rather a smaller space for a computer desk and then a table to be with people.
The word we've kind of passed around is multifunctional.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So you can be candid you don't have, but you don't have to mention any names. What has your biggest surprise been in talking to our staff? Besides the fact that it's, they're looking smaller instead of bigger. Mm-hmm.
To be very honest, that everything else I kind of halfway expected, but I have to tell you that in however long I've done this, including even if you went to a school and tried to design a new school, rarely you actually get someone not asking for more than they need because of this perception that if I don't ask for this, I get this anyways.
Yeah.
That has truly been the unexpected.
Okay.
And it's been unexpected not because it happened, but because it happened at every department. You know, sometimes you'll find somebody with that vision, but not generally everybody marching towards that same goal. You know, we've on the periphery had conversations about, you know, well, maybe some of the spaces that we think are general spaces, like large lunchrooms and things like that, don't occur in this building, but to occur in support services. And I've broached those subjects to kind of gauge, you know, what the feelings are, and to a T, everyone has basically said, well, we understand. I think that has been the biggest surprise. There seems to be an awful lot of emphasis in not dreaming, but actually getting what they need.
So you feel it's a very realistic expectation that it's been given to you?
Absolutely. In terms of next steps, obviously you know that at some point we put this program together, we make it match some DOE thing, and then there's a spot survey that happens after. So we're working towards that goal. Had some conversations with Scott, Mr. Sanders, earlier today about, you know, what our next steps are in terms of keeping those things going to work with your board schedule.
I think Mr. Sanders, I believe it was Mr. Sanders, who stated that the number, that 39.5 actually was within the DOE matrix for a district our size with the number of staff that we have. Is that still correct?
Yes.
Doesn't mean it'll be approved. That just is within their matrix, right?
That's what they were willing to approve.
Okay.
That amount is something that they were comfortable with. If we asked for more, they would review it. If we asked for less, obviously that would be no problem.
Okay.
That number was something that they could do.
Okay.
All
right. Okay. I know you have to head south. Thank you so much for taking
Thank
the
you.
Time
Sorry about
staying.
That.
I appreciate it so much.
Absolutely.
I know the board does too, and it's board members again. You know, if you wish to contact him individually, I'm sure that's not a problem. I just felt as though we needed to have this discussion in the sunshine.
Thank you. I want to keep the board in the loop as well. You know, once it goes public, then there's other people that want to talk to you.
Sure.
Okay. So, you know, I'd like Scott to, we had actually a gentleman, you want to pull a chair up, Scott, just to, I just want to keep you in the loop about people that are contacting us and that we're actually checking things off of our list, and I haven't received a report yet, but I know that you and a group looked at another building.
Thank you, Mr. Sanders, for being here.
Good afternoon, everybody. The report that you're speaking of, you will see hopefully today in a memo format. It's basically two pages of an investigation that we did at what used to be called the 777 building. It's
right.
the Curtail Medical Offices
right.
or building. It's on 37th Street. In that report, it outlines a visit that I and Pete Coatman with the building department, we took a tour. We looked at the structure. We looked at the windows. We got up on the roof. We visited the spaces that were available for lease. We looked at the grounds, looked at everything that we felt like we needed to evaluate, and I've compiled that into, again, a memo. I dropped off the what I hope is the final draft to Carter right before I walked in here, and I think you'll be able to see it today, and it outlines all the findings with a summary of perceived advantages and disadvantages of that location.
And somebody came to our office to present this to us, and that's why I thought we just needed to follow up.
And you did the same evaluation that you did on the other properties that were brought forward, so this is the
yes.
same format, so it'll fit right in with our information.
It's a condensed format because it's one building, but it's
okay.
we tried to evaluate it the same way, which is how we would evaluate anything going forward as well. Again, you know, we looked at structure, we looked at needs of the district, we looked at proximity to schools, we looked at the power grid, we looked at parking situations, tried to do a thorough evaluation in the same capacity that we did for all the other locations we visited.
Well, I know Ms. Jimenez has a question, but I have one more question on that. That is, what year was that built?
The A, B, C, and D wings were built in 1980. The E wing, which is the back building, it's a building all to itself, was built in 2000.
Okay. Ms. Jimenez, you had a question?
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up. Is that the same facility we all got packaged? That's the building that we're referring
to?
The picture?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, thanks.
No, that was a different building.
A postcard building?
No. You're talking about 2300 Third Court.
Okay, so that's a different one.
Yeah. That's the one that we looked at before.
Correct. 2300 is the one we looked at before. This is a new building that we haven't discussed before.
Just down beyond the hospital.
Okay.
It
looks like it belongs on the beach in Maui. It's two sections, and it's open court when you walk in.
You park underneath it.
I really thought it had been there longer than that. But yes.
Well, that was my concern about it, is being closer to the water, and then, you know, the is that a flood zone?
You'll see in the memo it's in flood zone AE6, which is AE is a determined flood zone. A lot of times you'll see flood zones that are different designations that are interpolated. This one is actually determined by FEMA to actually be flood zone elevation 6.
Is that still the original roof? That's a flat roof to begin with, and it's...
The roof on...
I know you have the... You've already said... I'm sorry.
Can I ask you a question?
When I get the memo? Pass it out.
No, don't do it. I can read.
But this is just to bring you up to see that there's, you know, now that it's out there, there are people that are coming forth to say, do we have a deal for you?
Right.
And,
okay.
So we want to check it out and, you know, send
Thank
people
you very
on site.
Much.
Just to follow up on my question, then, that building that we got the letter about was the building that we already looked at?
Yes.
Okay.
And Scott, were those architectural drawings of what that building could be? You know, that one we got?
It was a rendering.
It
was a rendering, I think. I can't speak for sure, but I think that was a rendering of what they had envisioned after the hurricane, what it would look like.
That's not the building that you looked at.
No. The owner / architect... I think that's what he is. He's an owner / architect.
I don't think he's an architect. He's a businessman.
Okay.
I think he's a contractor.
Yes, he's an owner / contractor. My apologies. Yes, he is. I know they've tried very hard to make that work, including going to the city of Vero Beach for a variance to get the road closed and some other things. So I thought that was great. He thought he had it done, but.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Tisello. Thank you very much.
Thank
you. I hope you have time to get to go where you need to
go
next. Thanks.
Flooding it in here.
Thank you.
All right. And we will definitely call individually, I'm sure, if we think of something that we'd like to add.
With the wet ball?
I was thinking hair and makeup.
On the record.
I know.
Waterfall in the bathroom.
Hair and makeup. It's going to be hard to find a DOE classification.
Oh, there you go.
Cosmetology class.
Very much. All right.
Now that Sanders is gone, we can talk about it.
Okay, Ms. Disney, if we could go back to your subject of work week.
Yes. We have the platform coming forward from Treasure Coast Work Group. There was some question brought about whether or not we need to take action on this. We did take action on it last year, but in years past we had not taken action on it. I did bring it forward for action last year, and I propose to bring it forward for action this year, because as your legislative liaison, I do my best to represent the board in the conversations that take place as we're creating these platforms, but I don't think it should be up to me to decide whether or not this is representative of the board's intentions. So I would prefer to have it on action and for the board to approve it as a whole.
Oh, and it keeps it transparent.
Yes.
Like that. Very
nice. Yes. So nothing in here is going to be a surprise to you. We've had these conversations at Critical's work group, which have been attended by Dr. Adams and Ms. Menez and myself and Ms. Morrison and even some other staff on occasion. And we've had these conversations about the different items that are in here. In fact, some of the items in here they've taken from our platform. So.
And they overlap with the superintendent's platform, which I'm going to give you a copy of later. Yeah. So, yeah, so.
So it isn't
a lot of common things.
Ms. Bank, it is scheduled for action. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah. Any board comments? Any questions about any of this? I do applaud you bringing this forward for us. I know that you have I know we have great confidence in what you move forward with, Ms. Dixon, but I also know that this just keeps it much cleaner, and then no one can, then there's no second guessing after it is being proposed.
And when we do our advocacy work, you know, for instance, there's a couple of pages on back here on federal advocacy.
Right.
It isn't one person coming in and giving an opinion. It's giving the opinion of the board and the district as a whole. So it carries a little more weight for each person that you speak to that way.
And Mr. Crawford did do a conference call with superintendents as well to, you know, review the information and kind of reach a consensus on. So
it's
I think everybody's been.
This document, more than any of the other platforms we have overlaps with superintendents. Mm-hmm. And that is, I think, valuable to be speaking to both voices.
Ms. Manning?
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up. I see that on the last page, there's the rate. And when we were up in D.C., one of the things that we talked about in terms of, you know, at the federal level is school districts giving input, and I don't know if you already missed that deadline, because they are talking about, you know, greater flexibility and things like that around E-rate, and I don't really know how that impacts Indian River County, but that opportunity to, you know, as a school district, have a voice, send a letter, let them know is really important. Because if everybody does it, you know, it gives them a message that people are paying attention.
Okay. Having greater flexibility would be wonderful. It is a...
Yeah, it's a great program. It really is.
Yes, but it's a nightmare to follow, you know, but having some flexibility would be good.
And the process is onerous, but...
Yeah, it is
clear. The results are terrific.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Mr. McCain.
I do have something, but I didn't put it on the thing.
You don't have to.
Okay. First of all, I don't know if you guys have, or if not, and I apologize, I did not bring this up to Fran beforehand. I wish I should have, and I didn't, but it's not that big a deal. I've been getting a guy named, and now, of course, I didn't even bring any of my notes, but John something, and he is a potential vendor, and he told me that, of this, but he was with a company, he talked to a Coach Aarons over at the high school, and Greg gave me my name, and so I started talking to him, and he deals with a company that provides driver's education. And I remember I asked you this a while ago, and you said talk to Carter about it. And I talked to Carter, and Carter looked into it, and we found out, and you guys, you may know about this, and has he been talking to you guys or just me?
Well, actually, I think we all got just some general information, but I did ask Dr. Adams to do an update, if she would, on the driver's ed and that whole issue.
Yeah.
So.
Well, what Carter told me was, I'm sure, the same thing, is that, you know, that's funded, driver's ed was funded with a separate mechanism, whereby a few dollars of every time they wrote a ticket, a few dollars, and it was with the Schlossberg Foundation, was involved in it. And so a few dollars would go into a pot, and then we could use that, schools could use that in order to fund driver's ed, because driver's ed is so expensive. And what happened was, is apparently, and then this guy John, I went back to him with the information. They went and met with the county folks, because apparently what happened was there was an item before the county commission to actually increase that rate, and the county commissioners at the time not only denied that, but then they passed another motion. Somebody another motion to do away with it.
That's correct.
So they did away with the whole
thing.
So what Carter says is we went and kept the program going for as long as possible until all those funds were exhausted. Now that fund is at zero. Well, this guy, in working with the representative from the Schlossberg Foundation, they went to the county commissioners, and they said the county is now amenable to readdress it and possibly do it. And what he told me, he says that, you know, he needs to step out now because he's a vendor. And, you know, whether we pick him or not, who, you know, that would go through the process. But he he said that you might want to look into it because apparently the county is now willing to readdress it, and it's going to take, it would take, you know, a year, 2 years, 3 years, how long to build up that fund, you know, from the things enough.
Yeah. I would go back and look at the money, but that it wasn't a lot of dollars, and it did not fund the driver education program. What it did is fund for subs for summertime. Okay. You know, we used to offer it in the summertime too. But we had.
I'm sorry, but it was my understanding it enabled us to do it in the summertime. Is what I understand.
Yes, yeah. It did. Right. So we had three driver. We had two at Vero Beach High School. Mm-hmm. One at Sebastian River High School, driver education, and in one of our budget cut years, we cut driver education, which means that we cut three teachers, we sold the cars, Vero Beach High School was renovated, you know where the driving range was, so, I mean, the driver education program basically was gone, and the Schlossberg did help us keep it going in the summertime where students could enroll and get that credit in the summertime, and we could pay a couple of teachers to do that. But since that time, the driver education, the entire program has been dismantled. So the Schlossberg did assist in that, but it did not pay for three teachers and the cars and the space. So reinstating Schlossberg is not going to pay for the cost of the program. Wasn't so you're talking about a couple hundred thousand dollars.
I was going to say, wasn't it, Schlossberg was only $30,000 last
year.
I thought it was a lot more than that.
No, it was. I can find out the amount, but it was basically paying for those extra times when school wasn't in session. Didn't pay for the teachers' salaries. Paid for extra time.
And just so you know, Harriet Green was one of the, she was affiliated with that group at one time.
Yeah.
And the year that we cut it, the budget year that we cut the program altogether, I did go in and speak with her about it. And she did not pursue it after that because she understood where we were as far as how much it was. People in the community, when they say we have a funding stream, they don't understand what that encompasses. $30,000 is definitely not going to pay for three teachers.
And the reason, and this has been going on for months, and the reason I didn't make it, because I knew I was talking to a vendor, you know, who had a financial interest in seeing it going, so I didn't, you know.
So what does he do, actually, the vendor?
He has one of these companies, the third-party company that actually runs the thing.
Okay. Because the other thing we did at one time is we did it through adult education.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, we're adult educated. Oh, yes. You did have to pay for it. But we did have somebody that, you know, was contracted through them where you could, you know, you could do it. But I think we used the high school course, driving range, you know, to do that. And actually, Mrs. Green and Jim Luther came in to see me, you know, one time, and we talked about it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Jeff called me about it months ago.
Yeah. So we had a discussion about it. Well, we did, and actually we went back and we did we went back and we looked at the cost and we did an assessment and we analyzed what it was would cost us and got back to him on that. But it's very costly to reinstate it.
Just a minute.
Yeah, I guess my question is, you know, is this yet another responsibility that schools need to take on? There hasn't been a driver's ed program for how long now? And kids are still getting their driver's permits. They're driving.
This is the fourth year, I think.
So I just think we just take on so many things, and we need to, you know, to focus and to remember what our mission is. And maybe driver's ed is not our mission, you know, because we continually spread ourselves thin.
You know, and I can appreciate the interest, but I don't think, I think there's that misconception about the Doris Schlossberg Fund and how much we were generated and what it actually paid for. So, you know, if there's somebody else that I need to get in contact with, I'm glad to do that because it comes up periodically. It'll come up to the surface again. So,
well, and when the county commission cut that all together. No, as far as I know, unless the former superintendent was contacted, board members were not contacted about input.
We found out about it, but it didn't. That's not what cut our driver education program.
We had a few years of students not being able to get in because the number of seats was so limited that I don't think the parents felt the cutoff type of impact. I think they just sort of thought, well, I can't get in again.
Especially at Sebastian River High School, because I opened the school, we had one driver education teacher, and then we would have a sub on Friday so that the driver education teacher could take the kids out to drive. You know what I mean?
Additional impact on the budget.
Yeah.
I had Carson Coleman as my driver
education teacher. And Carson was at
He used to let me go fill up the cars with gas.
And Fuzzy.
All over to
Oh, yes.
And Fuzzy.
Yes. What was his last name?
What's Fuzzy's last name?
Huh? Fuzzy Coggins?
Yeah,
Coggins. Yeah.
And then another interesting part is Yolanda Lucas, Catherine, daughter, would do it in the summer. She was one of those that we used the Schlossberg dollars. Okay. She and one of the ones from Ribbage High School would do the summer program.
Tony Perry, who I played high school ball with, he was doing it this past.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. McCain. Appreciate it.
I said I'd bring it up, and I did. I'm done.
Done your job.
I did my job. I did have to pie though. Excuse me.
Well, hurry up.
I just got to go a little later.
We've already talked about the administrative space. I was going to bring it up to the board today as to whether or not to give direction on whether we wanted to meet with Mr. Trusella individually or as a group. And because of his time frame, rather than trying to schedule four board members to meet individually. So that's no longer an issue for us. So I'm going to talk about a forum on Common Core. We've talked about this.
Did you get your turn?
Of course not. Did I go by you?
No.
It says Brombeck, McCain, and Johnson.
No, you went first. That's the prerogative of the chair, and I understand that. I have no problem with that.
Well, you know what? You're absolutely right. I did go first. I will talk about Common Core later.
I just want to say that I'm very pleased and surprised at how well we all had similar thoughts on this space for board members. That was pretty cool, right? Okay.
Staff has been pretty amazing.
No, and
staff has been
really
so aligned.
You brought it up because I think that this is the way we should be doing things instead of these individual meetings.
Ms. Jimenez, would you please go on with the next
one? Yeah, no, my item was I just wanted to provide some feedback on this morning's workshop, and I just have two things, one point I'd like to make and one conversation I'd like to start. I really think that we need to be a little bit more mindful when these workshops are set up. If the content is so loaded, if there's so much content, I think it is a waste of everyone's time to think that we're going to fit it in, because it doesn't allow any room for conversation. When you're at a meeting and you're thinking, I have questions about this, and you're saying, well, I can't ask questions because my board members are in a rush to get out of the meeting, that is not conducive to conversation. So when these workshops are put together, if as they're being put together, somebody that's in that role of putting them together realizes, you know, this is way too much content, let's split this up. That should be done in advance because, for example, I was surprised to hear at the beginning of the workshop that it had already been determined that it would go until 11:30 and somebody canceled an appointment to do that. If somebody had told me that, I would have done the same thing. I had no idea that the intent was to go later.
I didn't come in with
and
that intent.
We
that
should be a team, that we should be working together. And I think that you can't be a team when you get the sense that there's all of this stuff that goes on and, you know, as we're not doing this as a team. So I don't know how this happened, but there was too much information, no room for questions without the stress of if I ask a question, everybody's going to get bent out of shape because I'm asking a question. And I just don't think that's the way a healthy board works. I think that it is an unfortunate situation to be put in. So I don't know how we can avoid that in the future.
I make no apologies for any of it, only because you never know how much information you're going to come across, you'd be able to do it. I thought, you know, when she went over it with me, you know, a couple of times, it was a lot of information, so I said to bullet it. But I also think that some of it generates a lot of discussion and some of it doesn't. So I can't, you know, I was unable to judge that it was going to take more. I came in thinking it was 2 hours. I did not come in saying it was going to be 2.5 hours. I thought it was going to be 2.5 hours, so there was no discussion ahead of time to make it longer. I think the discussion was valuable enough that it's a good idea to break it up. So I feel like my regret is that I didn't know all of those people were coming, that we could, that, you know, within the context of the school health services, you know, we could have done that earlier. But other
well,
than
and
that,
as far as canceling the meeting, I came in, I took one look at what all was in our packet, and I walked over to Lynn, and I asked her to please cancel my 11:15 with Mr. Jackson, because I was scheduled, I was scheduled to meet with him on a an access thing. It wasn't as though anybody had any information that nobody else did. I walked in, I saw what was there, and I shouldn't really have to explain that, but that's what I did.
But I think the other thing that caused more interaction was we had a lot of staff there, which was good, because they could give more detail.
That's right. They wanted to share.
So I think there was more discussion on their end, too, which I think is very valuable, because you want specific examples, and they're able to give it, which I thought was good.
I wasn't in a hurry to leave. I wished I could have stayed. I hadn't expected.
I mean, you know, in hindsight, it's too much.
It was.
You know, but it was good.
Information I'm interested in, and I'm sorry I had to go. It's just unfortunate.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that. It just that that tends to happen. All right, I'll save my other item for when everyone's gone.
For when everyone's gone?
When everyone's taken their turn, so I'm not accused of helping the time.
And I will try and stay in order this time. Ms. Disney. Yes, I have. It was made very clear when I talked about the ginger fella. That was my turn. That's okay.
That was number
one. Splitting hairs. It's okay.
No.
Ms. McCain.
No.
Now, can we talk about the forum on Common Core? We need to have a forum on Common Core.
Okay.
It is not Ms. Jimenez's turn. It is my turn.
Oh, I'm confused.
Mr. McCain, you said no. You said no. Mr. McCain said no, and it says Chairman Johnson.
I'm sorry.
Can we please talk about a forum on Common Core?
Go.
Can I talk a little bit about what staff talked about, and then you can decide.
I don't see your name on here. You're not in the rotation, Dr. Adams. Okay. Go ahead.
All right. We just had the staff had a discussion about it, too. You know, the idea of how can we make it interactive and what our ideas could be. And one thing is that we felt that we needed not just people from inside the district, but some experts from outside the district as well.
Okay.
And Mrs. Disney had talked about Kim McDougall out of the governor's office, who actually has all of the history and all of the background information that we can't answer in terms of some of those questions that come to the podium, okay, or accusations. So,
you said she's out of the governor's. What does she do? What is she?
She is an education aide.
Governor. All right. Thank you.
So she was one. The other that actually came to Indian River and did a good job from the Department of Education was Mary Jane Tappan. Okay?
Yeah.
And so, again, you're kind of bringing in some outside experts to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to an IRCEA e-board meeting, and Luke was there. And we felt that a couple of teachers that are using the Common Core standards, particularly like Luke, like an English teacher and a math teacher, that could speak to, you know, the rigor, how is the Common Core different from the next generation standards, but a couple of teachers who are, in fact, have some deeper understanding of the Common Core and how it's impacting them. And then we thought one person from the district office, and again, it needs to be somebody that has background. Cheryl Conley has been doing training with teachers, so that was the idea, but not to have, and then have a facilitator, but to keep the board off of the panel, and, you know, because you need people that can answer all these questions about the Common Core. So make it interactive. We were thinking about the idea we could have some a short PowerPoint just with some information about the background of the Common Core. We could have the Common Core standards by grade level available for people to pick up as a packet if they wanted to look at it. We'd have a moderator, somebody who would moderate it, and then let people ask the questions. Mm-hmm. Just open it up for questions so that you've got people from different venues, from the governor's office to the Department of Education to our local experts that could answer from their perspective.
Okay, board comments? Yeah, I had a meeting with someone in the community who suggested that we do what was done in the Moonshot Moment in one of those community forums where tables were set up and people got to rotate and find mm-hmm. out about different topics and ask questions. So the idea being that there could be a center for math, a center for language arts, a center for the assessment piece, you know, and four or five areas, and that way you avoid the grandstanding that tends to occur. Because, if you know, the purpose of this is should be really to educate the parents. And when I talk to parents in the community, I know that in some schools during the open houses or when teachers have talked to parents, the teachers have done a good job of sharing, some teachers of sharing with the parents, this is what's happening with your child with Common Core. So some teachers are doing that. But if we really want to educate the parents, we don't want to create yet another forum where a certain group is going to come and monopolize the questions. And if you have those centers and find a way of rotating, maybe at the beginning you can briefly have the experts speak, and then you can. There could even be a session where you have common questions and answers, because we've already had a lot of people ask certain questions and just kind of throw those out there, and then break people up and kind of diffuse that opportunity for just somebody hogging up the mic, and I don't know how you would facilitate it, because maybe you're thinking of collecting the questions on cards and reading them. I don't know how that is going to look, but from what I heard about the last experience, it was mostly everybody talking and then, you know, not a lot of time for questions, and then the only people that were there to ask questions had a very specific agenda, and it really wasn't representative of our community, so...
And we were looking at it from two different venues. Our experience that we were drawing from is from the tax referendum, you know, where we had the mm-hmm. meetings, the town meetings, and invited people. The people who are going to come, my sense, are the same people that come to this, mm-hmm. okay? And so it's their opportunity to get up and ask any question that they want to, and it will be addressed. You know, the parents aren't going to be the ones that ask the questions. Mm-hmm. So they aren't asking for the interactive panel. It's the group that doesn't feel like they're getting their questions answered. So I think we're looking at two different, you know, you're looking at educating.
Right.
We're looking at...
Ms. Disney.
With all due respect, Dr. Elms, I think that there are some parents that may have questions, though, and they may be getting lost in the sea of the ones that are just against it because they're against it. Mm-hmm. And that was my worry at the last forum, is that with the questions not being answered, there may have been a parent there of a third grader or a second grader who actually would say, I can't help my child with his math homework because now I don't understand how you're teaching it. You know, how can I help, mm-hmm. or why did it change, or how is it different? And those questions are really important, but they might get lost in the sea of, you know, all these other, the politically charged questions. So it's going to be really important to set it up in a way that we don't dismiss the people that have some concerns, and we make sure we answer the questions from parents that are, you know, legitimately concerned that their child may not be learning, or that they don't know how to support, that the parent doesn't know how to support learning now because it's something different from what they've seen before. And that design of that form is really important for that. And I like that idea of the smaller tables where you have people sitting at tables and speakers moving from table to table, and that way you don't have the grandstanding, and you do have an opportunity for each question to be answered. You know,
it'd be nice if you can break up the groups, however, where it's not the same group, because you get one of those grandstanders, and they are going to monopolize every table they're at. They just are.
And the other thing you can have at a table, at the tables, is a very strict protocol that says, okay, this is how we're going to do this. So I think if you have a strict protocol at each one of them, then you can do that.
You can give that out at the very beginning.
Yeah.
The ground rules. You can have at each table,
yeah.
You can have like a poster with, these are the ground rules. And whoever is facilitating would have that skill set to really facilitate the conversation and hold them accountable to the ground rules.
Just a minute, what were the categories that you said? I know
well,
math.
Well, these were just, I was throwing them out there.
Yeah,
so I was thinking about the math, language arts, the whole issue of data collection and privacy, assessment, and technology. And you could even combine assessment and technology. You know, but I don't, that's just mm-hmm. throwing
no,
it
I
out
like
there.
It. That's
but
why
I think that, you know, that might help dissuade that. And then that way, if people have really specific questions,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, the other thing I hear is that there's been some confusion about the testing. Because when you go to our website and you look at the chart about Common Core assessments, from K through 2, we're doing Common Core, but from K3 to K12,
mm-hmm.
it's blended, and it's very hard for parents to understand. I mean, parents have asked me that question. I'm like, you have to call your principal or you talk to your teacher. You know, you're saying that you've got blended Next Generation Sunshine State Standards, and you have Common Core State Standards, and it's blended. But in effect, this year, we're only testing Next Generation Sunshine State Standard, and our focus is FCAT, but we have to be preparing the kids for Common Core State Standards. That is confusing to the parents,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sure for the teachers who are trying to teach their content, that's got to be a little crazy-making to say, I have to teach this for this test, but I also have to be teaching this because next
that's
year I'm getting the other test. And,
yeah.
and when I said that to that parent, they said, oh, you know, it's not that the teachers don't get it. It's just that somehow they didn't understand that. And even sometimes having that conversation, and I said, go to our website. Here's the link. There is a chart there. There is information there. But, you know, I think sometimes people don't go to those websites. They hear things. They get confused. They get frustrated. And then, in the end, we come back, and we are the ones that hear all the negativity when we could have stifled it by educating a little bit better.
There is a lot of confusion today on the Common Core. You know, everything that you read on the media right now is confusion about what is the Common Core, how are we going to be assessed. So we can tell everybody what we know to this point, but it is going to change. You know what I mean? So that's one of our other dilemmas in terms of trying to present concrete information. In terms of educating about the Common Core, I think there are people that are out there that can do that, you know. I think, you know, I'm willing to do what you want. I know, I feel like I know who's going to come because, you know, that's just kind of we've seen over and over again who's going to show up at the meetings. I like the idea of doing it site by site, but I think that you're feeling as a board that the community's not feeling like we're willing to discuss it with them, particularly with those seeing, you know, only those people that come to the microphone and give their side of it. So I'm not opposed to it at all.
Well, there's some folks that feel like it's their job to educate us, that we don't really understand
right.
what Common Core is.
Sure.
And I know that's been the tone of several of the letters we've received recently. So those are probably better handled just on an individual basis, you know, because that person is
yeah.
really coming to us for information, and they feel like it's their job to tell everyone what they believe to be true. But the opportunity for the parents who have heard some of this and some of that, they really need to be sitting in front of us, because if they don't have the information, they're going to fill the void with something. So it's really important that those parents, and they are sort of being, you know, they're being approached in a lot of different
they're being
venues.
Fed.
Yeah, so
they're
right
there.
Being
fed. So we should. Mr. King, you have any comments?
The whole thing makes my hair hurt.
Okay.
I mean, I understand, parents. You know, I think your focus needs to be on parents. How you make that happen, the logistics, I'm not that smart.
Well, I love the idea of the tables. I do think we need to be careful as to
you know, those people who are going to be involved. And for me to sit with, I've done that kind of thing before, to me to sit with a group and there's one person who does all the talking here. Mm-hmm. And that has to do with having a strong facilitator. If it was math or language arts or whatever, I think we could include a couple of teachers. I think that would be good in Ratliff to have them leading those sessions, and I would rely on you to do that. What I still think is a huge component, and maybe it's just because it's me, maybe it's because of the demographics that I identify with a little more than the parents, the current parents, is I am just hearing a lot from people in the community who are very confused, and some of whom don't have grandchildren here, and they are not community members who are very interested in this issue, and they're only hearing the negative things, and they're not parents. I still have not heard from one parent. Not one. But I am hearing from a lot of people. I should say a lot. I'm hearing from probably, to date, I've probably heard from, probably a dozen people in the community. Close to it, give or take one. And that's the reason I brought it up, is I think that having a forum would show that we are being responsive and respectful of a request that keeps surfacing. I think including teachers is paramount. To have, I don't know what the results will be if we have Luke up there, or Mr. Flint up there speaking, or some others speaking, because they're passionate. And I think that can only work on our behalf. But I do think that some experts, especially some people from out of town,
you've got to give them a forum. They can't. Are you talking about at a table for them too?
No, they need to have something at the very beginning. Yeah. And it needs to be on neutral territory. It doesn't need to be at a school.
Oh, yeah, we talked about the Richardson Center, if that's possible.
Well, if they'll give us the... I don't think that the courtroom at the old courthouse would be big enough. But it might be. I don't know. But that won't cost us anything.
Yeah, and I'm not sure about you can't show a PowerPoint, you can't... the technology and the power.
Oh,
they do?
We've done it. Well, we did the shine the light on the budget.
Yeah, they've done that. They have a big screen. They have a huge
three screens. The center ones.
Are you talking about Richardson or are you talking about?
I'm talking about the courthouse.
Yeah,
the old courthouse.
I didn't know we're talking about different things.
I'm talking about Richardson.
Oh, no, I said Richardson Center.
The courthouse has a big screen TV, and I know that the Charter High School does their PowerPoint presentations every time they have a back to school session there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought you had a screen that you pulled up.
No.
In the old courthouse?
The old courthouse. There's a huge television. Oh, there's a huge TV screen. Huge.
Okay.
Live and learn.
Now, there is
there's a
curtain over it. That's no, they not a screen. Not a screen you pull up. No.
Okay. So they have this?
No, they have a thing that you attach here.
It's a thing.
They have a thing.
Yeah.
I don't know what that
means. There's a technical specification.
All right. Where are we going? Next steps on this? Do we want to try and do something? We have a short amount of time before holiday season.
You want Kimmy Dugal? We have to get her availability and work it around.
Yes. Actually, if we're going to do that, if we could bring a couple of people, somebody from the Department of Education and the governor's office, they've had to
have her give us a couple of dates.
Yeah.
Would that be the good starting point?
Yeah, I think it would be a good starting point, but I think we need to keep in mind that if we actually want to be able to have opportunities for people to hear about specific topics, if we bring in, say, three experts, you can't just bring in someone and have them speak for 5 minutes. And we're going to go back to our usual way of doing things where the experts come in and they take up the entire time, and then there's no time for people to ask questions. Maybe one expert that can give an overview, and they keep it brief, because I think part of what we do a lot of is and it's important to educate, but if we know we want to answer questions, we have to be realistic, because by the time every expert speaks, there's going to be no meaningful time, again, for people to ask questions. And I think this time we can't afford to once again come across that way, regardless of whose agenda, you know, who shows up. I think we have to set the tone and we have to set the example that we're open, we're willing to answer questions. But if we're going to have these people drive from Tallahassee, we're not going to have them drive all those hours to speak for a short period. Maybe we need to do two separate things. I don't know, but I think we're going back to the same thing.
Well, that's why I get her to give me a date because she'll provide me something else she's doing.
Right. Okay.
You know.
And I really think if we have people who, let's say if we have someone for math or language arts, you know, people sit at their table. There's eight, usually 8 to 10 to a table. I think the Richardson does have 10 talks, but I don't know how many they have. But
yeah,
you have, yeah. Well, I know they have 8 tops. I don't know if they have 6 tops that become 8 tops, so I'm not sure how that goes. Party planner that I was for many years for nonprofits. But I think that, you know, if we have a facilitator who will go, that person gets up from here and they go to the next table and that kind of thing. But if we had someone who could visit all the tables, like a Kim, of course, and I'm sure she would be comfortable with that. And if there's something that either can't be answered or whatever, then she would be the expert who could go around. And that's what I envision is, you know, the facilitator gets up and moves, the people don't move.
And I will tell you, teachers are not experts in the Common Core.
No, they
are. They know what grade level they teach, what subject they teach, and the Common Core standards in that subject.
So who's going to talk about math? Who's going to talk about language arts?
And do we talk about the second grade teacher? Do we talk about the geometry teacher? What I'm saying is, it's when you get down to the teacher level, which I think they could, you know, then we put them at a table. They're going to be able to speak to their subject and their Common Core, and they probably could speak to how this is different than what I've done before, but they won't be able to answer deep questions about Common Core, the topic of Common Core, nor would I expect them to.
Right.
You know, I can clear up misconceptions if I'm the teacher about what you think I might be doing, but it's very specific to a grade level, to a subject. And
okay, so what do we want? We still have not clarified what we want.
I envision somebody like Kim who gives an overview for 15 or 20 minutes and then have people at their table. A facilitator goes table to table with their different expertise in different things. And if it does get down to the teacher level of a second grade teacher, which it may not, and if it does, how many would there be?
Yeah.
You arrange a one-on-one for the right person, but I just don't see us having, you know, hundreds of people with all these special requests of information. I think they want to know conceptually what happens in the classroom.
But you know, I think along with that, like if having someone do what Luke did, you know, Luke spoke specifically to his area, and I think as a parent, to hear a teacher, maybe my concern is language arts, but to hear a teacher just talk about how they support Common Core, why, how it's working in their classroom. I think that's what a parent wants to hear, because we're hearing a lot of negativity about how this is dumbing down our standards, you know, and just to give that snapshot of here is one teacher, one personal experience, but this is how in math this is coming across, because nobody can do that. Like, people can, we can write letters to people, but we can't get into the weeds of what happens in English and what happens in math, and we can't do that. Nobody can really do that, but a teacher can talk from their experience, and it's almost like they're giving a testimonial that we're doing this Common Core thing, and it's working with our students, with my students. I see it working in math. I see it working in English, and if anybody has particulars, we can tell our facilitators, make sure that they are referred to whatever. If it's this math, this teacher, talk to their teacher or something like that, but to give like a little snapshot of practice.
Well, that's the passion. You always balance with somebody with the passion. Mr. McCain?
Again, and I said I was going to leave logistics to you all, but just, I'll throw this out there. You have the tables. You have Kim, what's your dinger?
McDougal.
Yeah. Talking.
McDougal.
Okay.
At that point, you just open up the room. You allow people, instead of going around in one big, huge mass, you allow people, you have people standing at each one of your table, your expert or your representative standing at each individual, and you just allow people to go up
and ask a question. That way you don't have one voice hogging each individual table. You allow people to go up. You still have Kim there. So people want to go up and ask her a question. She's so amenable. If somebody asks Mr. Flynn a question, he doesn't know the answer. He has to believe, hey, Ms. Schwarzenegger, can you go over here and help me with this? So she can float around the room and just let people go to the areas that they want to go to.
Mm-hmm. Sort of like a college night.
Exactly.
Go where you want to go.
Because you said some earlier about having one very powerful voice dominating the conversation. Well, this eliminates that, and it lets people to go ask their conversation, go ask questions, and they can ask questions not in front of a whole group. They can ask questions just by themselves.
So,
I can tell you that you've heard Kim, right? Were you there for? She understands where the genesis of the questions comes from. For instance, the dumbing down of the math, I think, comes because there are two states who actually had higher math standards than the Common Core. Massachusetts was one of them, I believe. And so that is actually a truism in that particular state, is that the Common Core standards are not as difficult as the standard that they had. But it isn't true in Florida. The Common Core standards are a little thinner, more depth. So she understands where the questions are coming from, so she's able to give the answer and the information back that clarifies why they believe that.
I mean, I think we have to think about what our purpose is, and I think the school board and the superintendent support Common Core. But does our public know that? You know what I mean? Are you willing to take a stand, board, to say that at this meeting that you support the Common Core? You know, I mean, I think that's the message that we want our community and the people to hear if we're going to have a meeting. I think what I've been reading is, you know, Pam Stewart's going here to there to talk about the Common Core. Pasco County supports Common Core. St. John's County supports the Common Core. What are we saying that we support? And if we support the Common Core, then those of you who think that it's dumbing down the curriculum, Kim McDougall can say, now wait a minute, let's talk about that. Luke Flint can say, you know, here's why I don't think it's dumbing down the Common Core. Somebody else can say.
I think we as a board have been reticent to take a position publicly.
It's only with these people coming to the mic. You can't respond to them.
But we're here because we know that there's misinformation in the community and there's misunderstanding, and this has been going on for a while. Yet we as a board have not taken a stand. And it doesn't have to be take a stand at the dais in front of people. It could be in the form of an opinion piece, or it can be a form of a statement sometime in our meeting during discussion, acknowledging that there's a lot of misunderstanding, a lot of confusion. But your board, collectively, your board corporates, we want you to know that we support Common Core. We have not done that. And I think the fact that we have been reticent to do that has sent a very strong message for people to come and keep trying to educate us because they don't know where we stand. And I know some of you may think that that is absolutely none of their business, and that's fine. But, you know, I do think that as a board collectively, we have a responsibility to speak up when it is needed. And I don't think we've done that.
And I'm talking about this meeting.
Right.
You know, what is the purpose of the meeting, just to educate parents about it, or to tell them that we are moving, we want you to know this because we support higher standards?
Let me back up. There is no opportunity that we have had.
Yeah. I don't think at the dais you've had a chance.
There's no opportunity, nor is there any reason for us to have taken a stand there. I have taken a personal stand at meetings as evidenced by Ms. Rosemary Wilson, who comes up and says, well, we know where Mrs. Johnson stands on this issue in support of Common Core. So I certainly have not been quiet.
And you know what? I can speak to it. I maybe need to say something to say that your superintendent supports the Common Core. You know, I am not willing to get into a debate with him.
I am not either.
At the Taxpayer Association meeting or anywhere else, because
I know.
We're
not going to win that one.
You're not going to win that one.
No, you don't know.
But when I have been asked, when I have been at meetings,
right.
I've been at two Republican meetings, and I have been asked, and not by Ms. Wilson, but by other people, what my opinion is, and did I support it, I answered them very you know, a short sentence with a period at the end. And I said, absolutely. Absolutely. And I stated that everything that you have been told, I am sure, is true off of the internet, and it probably is true, as you said, in some states. That is not what is happening in Florida. And I don't know if anybody has seen, there's a new commercial, I was told, I haven't seen it, but there's a new commercial, one of the big oil companies is talking about moving our country forward, and it says so-and-so in support of Common Core. I don't know if it's Shell Oil or something, but it's a big one. Mm-hmm. And it says, have you seen it? But it's in support of Common Core. If we want to change where we're headed educationally, in support of Common Core. I haven't seen it, but I was told about it.
We didn't have to say we supported the Sunshine State Standards.
No.
They are adopted by the state of Florida.
Well, frankly, you don't have a choice.
No. that's the part that I...
But on the other hand, you know, it's... We don't have a choice. And I don't even want to pose it that way because I support it. You know, here's why we need to... here's why you need to have the information for the Common Core. And, you know, I support it as your superintendent.
So what are we going to do moving forward to do this forum?
Yeah.
We're going to try for Richardson. First, you're going to get available dates.
Yes. Yes. And we have got to do a better job about talking about this in the right vernacular. It is Common Core State Standards, just
right.
Like Sunshine State Standards.
That's right.
It is
right.
Not Common Core, because that is where this whole curriculum issue comes up. And that is the meat of the argument,
is that
we don't talk about it in the correct vernacular.
Right, that's true.
Common Core State Standards.
And it is hard to dispute when someone says, here is, I don't remember what it was, but here is so-and-so state. And this is the text, this is their textbook adoption, and this is page so-and-so of that textbook, and this is what it says. That's hard to say. This is not us.
Those are the people that are going to be at that table, and they're going to have
that's
that
exactly
piece of
right.
paper, and the person that's talking, they're going to say, here's this excerpt out of a textbook.
Okay.
How do you defend
and that? I will tell you, that's what I'm getting
from
the community
really
members.
Good.
That's what I'm getting from community members. And why don't we take it? How many times have you heard in those presentations, why aren't we taking a vote on whether to support Common Core or not, except for Mrs. Johnson?
The state of Florida has adopted
it.
I know.
But when I've got information.
They think we can opt out.
I've even gotten some information. I didn't get any link to anything official or to a news press release, but I'm trying to think. It was the day I left vacation, I believe it was, or the day before, the day I left, that Governor Scott was backing down on his support of Common Core. Have you seen anything on that?
He pulled the park, and that's what they're calling Common Core.
That's why we need to talk to people.
Because
mm-hmm.
people are asking me the same thing. I've had at least three people come up to me and say, oh, you're not doing Common Core anymore, right? The governor pulled out. And I said, no.
So it's just
the
part.
Testing
okay.
piece. And
okay.
it's that stuff that is...
Mm-hmm. Okay. And as far as the testing piece goes, park is still on the table.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. it's all
but he's
so
got,
political.
He's asked for it to
it's
be
so,
examined and to not be in the...
Yeah.
Not be the fiscal agent
yeah.
for the
committee. So really,
no,
what are
still
the
serving yeah. on the committee?
What
There's
are the Common Core standards? That's kind of what we
Common Core
want to get.
Yeah.
And
but
that's
I
why I thought if you had tables
important.
And you talk about the assessment, Common Core State standards in math, Common Core State standards in English, technology, you know, the different thing, make that distinction so people can understand that it's not all one.
But Matt's right. We've got to have the facilitator standing there who can actually answer those particular questions. So it's not just Ms. McDougall. It is anybody else who is going to be there speaking has got to be knowledgeable.
Right.
And when those pieces of paper are pulled out, they have to know, you know, they're... And I did ask this question at the one of the meetings, the women's meeting that I went to, and I said, where did this come from? I said, there's no, you know, this has a headline and all that, but it doesn't reference a city, it doesn't reference a state, doesn't reference a date. I said, there's nothing on here. And there wasn't. And everybody in that room was talking about that piece of paper. Everybody was. Look at this, look at this.
But that's why I think the combination of Kim, who's dealt with the political side of it.
That's important.
And somebody like Mary Jane Tappan, who's dealt with the standard side of it, is a good combination because they've been going around the state. They've heard this over and over and over again.
Well, she's been there through all three sets of standards, Mary Jane has. So she can talk about the differences.
Yeah. I mean, I have a little concern about putting staff up against these people because... They challenge you on every front. You cannot give them a good answer, and they challenge you on every front.
Well, they will never be.
And so you don't want them influencing the people around them because you.
How about you do it then instead of the going around, having a panel, so that you have your panel that can say something brief on each of the issues, and then people ask the questions, and then you've got a knowledgeable panel that can answer those questions.
Right.
That might be a different approach.
You're going to have the grandstander again.
I disagree that our teachers are couldn't go up next to Mary Jane because, you know what, or these people that are so against it, because their question is what's happening in the classrooms, and who better to tell what's happening in our classrooms but our teachers.
But they're not asking questions about the classroom.
Well, they're making accusations about, you know, you're doing this and you're doing that, and the teacher will say, no, we are not doing that. This is what we're doing. You know, for instance, because the Constitution is a recommendation of one of the nonfiction documents to be used, you know, there's that whole debate about fiction versus nonfiction,
right.
And the Constitution is to be used as nonfiction reading. And to use critical thinking in the discussions as part of one of the standards. That went from being what it is to being, now they're doing history in Common Core, and now they're criticizing the Constitution in Common Core. See how it goes from being an English standard of nonfiction reading to being they've created these
indoctrination
history standards. There are no history standards yet, but they've made it in their conversation that's what Common Core does.
Well, Dr. Adams, you should be pleased. I think everybody at this table is on the same page with you. I really do.
Well,
I really do. I think we're on the same page. How we're gonna make this work, I'm not sure, but we need to be working.
Well, and I think, you know, I am more inclined to the panel, and then finding out what parents want to know. What are your questions coming out of this? I mean, I think we have got to finally address straight up those people that are coming to the microphone, because they're going to be there. And I think we just have to have people there that can look them in the eye and say, this is the answer to that question.
Panel idea, but I really feel like I understand we need to be focusing on parents so that parents aren't confused and so that they're... Because it's their children and their children's future that's going to be impacted. But we cannot dismiss a very vocal, active community
who is
part of it. I know we keep talking about parents and what we've done in North County and South County. We're parents. But we have got to involve the community. They are as critical of what is happening as anybody else.
We want to get a lot of parents here so they can hear the answers
to
these questions that are being asked. And we've got to have the right people there to answer those questions.
Absolutely.
And then, after that, parents, what more do you want to know? Okay, so, you know, we want you to hear all of this and you give some information, but I know there's probably more information that you want, so... You let us know what more specific information you want, but get it all out so that everybody has that chance to say what they want, and you've got some people there that can give direct answers to that.
How would it be if we, and I really do agree with Ms. Amendez. There's nothing I dislike more than a dog and pony show, and that's it. Here you go, and, you know, here's... I just don't think that's what we want to do. I like the idea of having a panel. I like the idea of that kind of a format. I like that. I like that people are going to have to ask questions. But what if we ask those people who are the experts, say the last half hour? Let's say we do an hour and a half, or whatever, 1 hour open and a half hour where these people agree to stay for 1/2 hour, and just like you do if you go to something and you have a speaker and you want to take the time to stand in line and speak with that person one-on-one for a specific question you have about their book or their proposal or their new idea, and just
hang around later, and if you want to talk to Kim at Google, or
and there needs to be with each of those experts, you're going to need a handler there. We need to, for each one of those people. You know, I already have the fascist label. I'm happy to facilitate it when it comes to the open forum. I don't mind that at all. It doesn't bother me. But you're going to have a handler with each one of those people, so that they can move, not the facilitator, but the handler can move somebody along. Okay, Miss Disney, you've had enough.
Well, and I think a half hour is enough time to do that.
I do too. But that would allow for a half hour one-on-one. Yes, you're going to have to get in line and take your
or a small group clustered around somebody. You know, somebody, so and so is going to be over here if you have some more questions, right?
Yeah, but I do think that, you know, there are people who are willing to stand in line to get an individual question answered.
All right. Well, let me take the information so far that we have, and we'll.
And then once I connect you two, then you and her talk a little bit about what her experience has been.
Okay, that would be great. So we'll start. You're going to start with trying to get us a couple dates. Okay, great.
And
Mary Jane.
Well, you have a good relationship.
Okay.
With Mary.
Yeah. Okay.
But we would. I think the board would really like for this to, because this needs to be not only Indian River County School District open house on Common Core state standards. It needs to be the Indian River County School Board presentation, whatever we want to call it. They may have some suggestions as to what they've had in other communities. But I think that needs to, again, be in neutral territory, not
the other thing I was going to announce tonight, if our friends are there, is, you know, there are three places where they're having hearings. So I want to be sure that everybody knows that their voice can be heard at these hearings.
Well, most of those have already. When I first started hearing from folks, they had already been to an anti Common Core thing in Orlando that evidently had a huge number of people there, huge number. But that's been probably March or April that took place, and I think I did tell you about that because we had several.
They're pretty well organized.
It's extremely well organized. Oh, this is fun.
Timeline. Are we kind of looking prior to the holidays? We'll try to do this before Thanksgiving? How's that? Okay.
Depending on.
Yeah. Okay.
Ms. Dizzy, anything else?
No.
Mr. McCain? Mrs. Johnson doesn't have anything else? Well, I do. Don't you have somebody coming in?
I have a couple people coming in, and I have a couple handouts for you.
Okay.
So.
All right. Then I don't want to get into that. I'll get into the issue next roundtable.
Okay.
It's a long discussion and not time sensitive, so
yes. Well, how about if I give you your handouts until they get here? You'd ask for.
Board report?
Sorry.
Let's do those. Give me your reports.
Ms. McCain? No, but it's a bunch of boring meetings. It doesn't include anything about school. MPO is voting. Somebody re-brought up 750.
Okay.
That's making my eye twitch. So you can deal with that tomorrow. So.
Okay. All right. Ms. Disney?
Treasure Coast Council of Local Governments had a wonderful meeting at Harbor Branch last week. We went to the Link Engineer Building and had a presentation by three different people who are involved in the movement of water and the care of water in our state. A person from South Florida Water Management District, a person from the Lagoon, and a scientist. And it was just absolutely amazing to learn so much in such a short time about where we live. I'm reluctant to go to the meetings because we have so much that we need to do in education, and those meetings have been very focused on the Lagoon.
But what I heard the last time I was there is it's so impactful to our quality of life and our economic development that I, as much as it sounds like I'm trying to get out of going to these meetings all the time, I would really love it if you all could take a turn and go to these meetings, because that is the focus of what they're doing right now. And Mr. O'Brien has really shown some leadership in this area of our, you know, of our county, and you know, in the neighboring counties as well. So, if anyone is interested in going to those meetings, next month is the meeting that is the luncheon, and they also do the election. It's going to be out at Marsh Landing in Bellsham. Oh. So, I don't have the date, but it's the first Wednesday in November.
Okay.
So,
it'll be the 6th.
Yeah. And we're actually going to meet at 9:30 and go out to the Elfin Center first.
Oh, wow.
And then we're going to go.
Okay, so you are going to that one, is that what you're saying?
Yes.
So we don't need to worry about the November meeting.
Yeah.
We'll come to that too.
Yeah.
So Judy, if you have to notice that, please notice it. I'll confirm it.
And as many board members as want to go are invited to go.
What time does the meeting actually start?
We normally start at 10, but because we're going to the Elephant Center first, we're going to come back and sort of meet and meet at the same time. Yeah, it is.
One of the things they're talking about doing is maybe doing a literacy lagoon combination so we can get our children focused on, you know, the lagoon as well. So.
Well, coming up on November 1st, we have the ELC doing up close and ecological invitation. I don't know if you were invited to that, but it is for leaders and elected officials and then people like yourself. So if you haven't already RSVP'd, it's November 1st.
Ms. Stang, if you put down that Ms. Jimenez, Ms. Disney, and Mr. Johnson will be there on the 6th, that is a Wednesday on here.
And please confirm that it's a 6th, because I recall last year they changed the date.
They don't want to come in. Mr. Stang, you want to go and look at the elephants?
I don't like being around a bunch of politicians.
There's two or three elephants out there right now.
The elephants are animals.
If we could, while we're waiting for our folks to come in, board members, would you take a look at your calendar for November the 5th? To see
really
if we could do the next portion of our student services workshop at 9 o'clock on the 5th. I don't have anything else down. I know we have stuff in the afternoon.
This is a copy of the FADS Lego Lego platform. Very informational, so if you enjoy it. This is a copy of School Board Replay.
Do you have another FADS thing? I didn't get one.
Yes, I do.
You didn't get one?
Nope.
Hey. And we have a 1 o'clock that day. We have 1 o'clock roundtable that
day. Hi.
So it'll be 9 a.m. Don't even start the table down there.
Don't even
start.
Hi, Jared.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm well.
Move all this.
Good to see you. It's good to see you.
Nice to see you again.
Good to see you.
Hi, how are you? Nice to see you. I saw it. And it's always
good to see you.
It's been too long since you've been
here. It has been a while.
How are you?
Hey, good to see you. Thanks for coming. Thanks for driving over.
You're welcome. I actually just got off a plane from Los Angeles.
Oh, you did? Oh, my gosh.
I boarded a flight at midnight last night.
Oh, wow.
Or 3 o'clock our time, depending upon which coast you're on.
Wow. I hope you drove.
I did.
Wow,
I wanted to, but
he
wouldn't let me for some reason.
Yeah.
I thought it was in my best interest to drive.
What about the rest of the people in the state?
Well, thank you all for being here. Now, Dr. Adams, you
want to
say why they're here?
Yes, I do. I want to let them brag about our school district because our Moody what do you call it, Moody Investor Service ratings just went up. And actually today Carter brought down something, the interest rates and the bids we had on our TANs, which looks very, very good. So I'm just going to turn it over to you, and you can tell them what it means to them as a board member to have this type of money.
I'm happy to do that, and I am going to brag on y'all a little bit. I hope that's okay. But this morning, as you have done in the past several years, you offered $10 million in tax anticipation notes in the public markets. It was done over the internet. People were able to submit their bids blindly, and they were able to refresh those bids, not knowing what the other bidders were. We've seen as many as 5 or 6 bids on a number of sales recently. You had 11 bids this morning.
Wow.
You had folks that were very, very aggressive to get your notes, to help you through the cash flow season until tax collections come in. And they were purchased by Raymond James and Associates. You had to really pay up for these, a whopping 16/100% was your rate. It was a 0.168155 if we're not going to round there. And the other 10 bids were not far behind. They range from that 16.8 basis points, one basis point being 1/100%, to 0.37%. But the next 4 bids were within less than a 1/100% of each other. So very tight, a lot of consensus in the market, and that's for a few reasons. First, even though long-term rates have creeped up and there's a lot of uncertainty out there, short-term rates have remained extremely flat. Treasury rates are yielding almost nothing. There's not a great deal of Florida short-term paper around, so it's attractive for people. So there's that. They still view it as a good, solid place to go. Second is that not only is the school district well-regarded, but the notes are rated by Moody's Investor Service, who also rates the school district's certificates of participation and puts an implied rating on the district itself. And while these notes are rated with what they call a MIG-1 or Moody's Investment Grade 1, which is specifically reserved for short-term securities, they also go in and look at your overall operations. They take a look at the economy. They take a look at employment rates in the area, what's going on from a more global basis. Unfortunately, they take a look at state support for public education, which is always one of the toughies in Florida. I'm being a little snide, but it's true. It's one of our bigger challenges with the rating agencies is the level and type of support that public school districts have in the state. And they look very carefully at your management. Now, a rating can either be stable. It has an outlook. Not only does it have a grade, it has an outlook, and that outlook can be stable. It can be negative. If it's negative, they mean it appears to us, unless things turn around, that sometime within the next year or 2 years, there's going to be a downgrade. Something wrong is going on. If it's stable, they say they're going to rock along. Nothing's going to change. They're doing fine for the rating category that we have them in. Or it can be positive, saying we think that there are some things here that are really indicators of strength that mean that this rating of certain other things come into place may rise, may be upgraded in the future. And that's what they did on your ratings here, which is pretty remarkable considering it has not been long ago that y'all had a few little financial problems. that
doesn't seem like it was that long.
that creeped into your audits and that had you... that allowed you to be up close and personal with the folks at the state for a while. But you've done a remarkable job since then of saying, hey, it matters that we run this place like a business. It matters that the taxpayers know that we're taking care of their money and that we have the ability to manage this professionally. Rating agencies look at that hard, and there are a lot of things that are outside your control, and the report talks about those. It talks about the fact that the economy is not the strongest, it's not the most robust, it's dependent upon agriculture and tourism, that you don't have much control over that, that real estate has been lackluster, your tax base has suffered, although it's starting to stabilize. But the one bright spot that it points out, it is said, but on the financial management side, these folks have done a wonderful job. And in their report, Moody's, I think, came as close to paying a compliment to your staff and to your board as they can get. They can't reach out and pat you on the back, but they certainly talked about strong financial management and the growing fund balances. Of all of the factors that they look at, when they narrow those down to those that are outside your control and those that are in your control, the single easiest for them to measure that's in your control are the amount of your fund balances or your liquidity. And for them, that's critical. And a lot of school boards have been confused by state statutes saying, well, the state wants us to have a 3% fund balance. State never said that. State said if you go below that, you're in trouble. The fact of the matter is that your fund balances are significantly higher than they've been in the past. But the real question, and one of the reasons we're here, is not only to congratulate you on that and congratulate the superintendent and Carter and his team, because they've worked hard at this, and what they've done with the rating agencies over the last 3 years has been pretty remarkable. They've made it a real point of focus. Every year we have conversations with them, whether we issue debt or not. They have to go through and answer a series of questions. We get on the phone. We discuss back and forth. Carter is interviewed along with Charlene by those folks, and they go into the report that you saw the other day. And so the question is, what does it take to get that next notch? And do you want to be there? And what would it mean? Well, did it matter to your interest rate on this particular issue? And the answer is we don't know. But we think that we probably got two, maybe three more bidders than we might have had without that positive outlook on the rating. We think that it spurred some people to bid. We believe that if your long-term rating were to be bumped another notch, would put you solidly in the AA category, that would certainly make a difference, and it would make a difference on your cost of borrowing if you had to borrow again long-term. Why does that matter, and should you do that? Well, it matters not only from a cost standpoint, but it certainly matters from the message it sends to the business community, to the investment community, and to your taxpayers about how you're handling their money and about how you're managing their kids and their process. Your fund balances have grown, and they seem pretty high right now. But that next rating level, if you bump up to there, you don't just get compared any longer with the school districts right around you. You're compared more on a national scale. And so if you look at your assigned and unassigned fund balances and you see what's out there, sort of the average around the country for the next rating level up would be about 17%. Just the purely liquid reserves alone would still be slightly into double digits. They're high. They're robust. There's one school district that we know of. It's one of the top 10 in the country. 12 years ago, they had liquidity that when we calculated it was about 16 minutes worth of liquidity. If they never sort of got it until we put it in those terms. If you've ever bought an equity security stock, you know about a little thing called days cash on hand, and they just never gave it any concept. And they're a $1 billion organization that had about $150,000 in liquidity, and so we calculated it for them. And they sort of got religious about it, and now they're the highest-rated school district in the state they happen to be in. But it was a mission. And did they do that for the rating? No. The rating was a result of them saying, as managers and as stewards of the public money, we want to do this because it makes sense, because it saves us money in the long run, but we also want to be recognized by folks outside who know what good management is. We want them using us as a yardstick against other folks, not the other way around. So that's really why we're here today, is say congratulations to you and say if you want to go to that next rung, it's going to take you 2-3 years to get there, but you've got a shot. And it just takes making some decisions and continuing to do what you're doing, letting your superintendent and finance folks lay out a plan for you and say, this is how we would accomplish this.
Well, you came along. You've got to have time. You sit at this table, you must.
My job was to play the driver today. Moody's, and I told this to Carter right before we stepped in here, Moody's was under no obligation to apply the positive outlook to your rating. That was done, I believe, solely to let you know that the things that you're doing are right. it was something that you don't see happen on a regular basis. Rating upgrades and downgrades are more common, and this is just sort of waving a flag where the analysts can't say, hey, I love what you're doing, keep it up. They can say, positive outlook, and then just sit back and let you read between the lines. So that's a really good thing.
It's a great point, because there was a lot of discussion before they went into committee, and there was a lot of discussion in committee saying, but wait a second, some of the other fundamentals are relatively weak. You know, the economy is not strong. It's narrow. State funding is consistently uncertain. And the counterargument was, but yes, look where they were just a few years ago, and look at how aggressive they've been. It didn't just happen. They laid out a plan, and they've been committed to it. They've demonstrated some really outstanding management in the financial area, and that deserves recognition. So that's kind of what's going on.
Board member comments? Well, thank you for taking this roundabout way to come and be with us today, and we appreciate that. But thank you for bringing the good news. Not surprisingly, I think the board is very aware of what we have as far as our CFO and all that we have. We quite often compliment what's happening, but that happens also because of leadership, and a tiny bit, I think, because this board, although we're a very diverse group, I think that when it comes to fiscal responsibility and accountability, I think we've been pretty committed to that. And with some good suggestions that have been made by our staff, I think we've been able to embrace those and say, yes, that's what we should be doing. And that's a hard thing to do, I will tell you. As a board member, it's a hard thing to do. When you look at having a little bit of a cushion, your first instinct is to share the wealth. But if you look at the big picture, you realize that can also be to your detriment in years to come. So I know we have taken a really hard line with that, and we've had some good advice along the way. And it's nice to hear the expert from out of town tell us
that's
that.
Right.
So thank you.
Well, what you're doing is not the norm. It is hard to do. I've been watching school boards do this for 29 years. And most of them don't take that harder route and are sorry that they didn't down the road. It's a short-term cost for real long-term benefits, not only for you financially, but I think it benefits your kids and your teachers, knowing that financial stability is there, that they're not being flipped around like a yo-yo. That's what it provides. That cushion provides you the ability to give them some stability.
Well, Cherry, thanks for that. I mean, it just seems like yesterday we were kind of on the brink, you know, and it was a commitment of the board and the employees of the district. I mean, there's been a lot that's happened over the last few years, but I really feel like there has been a lot of good planning, and I appreciate Carter and his team. He's got a good team behind him back there that works hard on our behalf, so I hope that we'll share that with them as well. But
little aside, you know, Charlene prepares the cash flows for you, and we use hers as an example for other school districts when they need to design a cash flow. We say, well, this is the one you need to use.
That's great. Appreciate that.
It's also interesting to hear that part of their equation is to include the state support for education. I find that quite interesting.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So because you live in a state, it's almost as though you have an advantage that a state such as ours, anyone in this state would not have when you get to an area where there is good support at the state level.
Where there is good support at the state level, or where there's greater latitude at the local level.
And
here you have neither of those. You know, it's amazing how many people think that you control your own millage rate. Right? I mean, you ask the average person, they say, well, they're authorized. They can do 10 mils. They just should do it.
Right?
Nobody has a clue.
No, they don't. But that's all right. We know. But it's very gratifying to have someone take the time to come and tell us that.
Absolutely.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Okay.
we're going to take a real quick.
Yeah, we've got one more. We just have Bruce, and that's it.
It's so good to see you, too.
How's your daughter doing?
She's fabulous. She's in college, writing studies.
Very
loving it. That daughter is at University of Alabama, and she's graduating this year.
Awesome.
She's double majored in sports medicine and psychology. It's good seeing you. Thank you. Great news. So, do I have to keep nagging though, or can I back off?
No.
Oh, was that on for Jerry?
Yeah, I just turned it on.
Good.
It's on now.
Make that a press release.
Thank you very much.
We need that to be a press release.
Okay, we have one more item, and it's regarding the student information system. And actually, Bruce is going to introduce his guest, but I want to let you know that there's lots of planning going on in the background for this infrastructure for upgrading our systems and the tax referendum. And so Bruce is going to talk a little bit about where we are on the student side of it, and he's also going to introduce some new.
Yeah, I know most of you have met, but I want to formally introduce again to our Director of Technology Services, Brian Bender. I think everybody's met him. But our newest employee in IT is Greg McDonald. He is our systems administrator, so he's over the programming department, the one that manages all the reporting to the state, terms. We were pretty lucky to catch Greg. He's done a lot of consulting work with St. Lucie, Okeechobee, lots of districts. He's the one who wrote... who wrote all of the electronic IEPs that you see our ESE department using. They had contracted out. So we're glad to have Greg on board. I just wanted to give you a little update. As you know, we went out for the millage for the technology referendum was part of that. The LIIS, we've talked about that a lot, the local instructional improvement system. But one of the pieces we haven't talked a lot about but was included was upgrading our core business systems, terms. That's a student package, the scheduling, grade, all that kind of stuff. There's a finance HR package, and there's a finance package, HR payroll, finance. You could buy three separate systems. We have one, all three modules from the same vendor. We actually purchased the student information system in 1998. So we were talking about this earlier. Imagine that's when Windows 95 was here. So think about Microsoft's evolution. Windows 95, Windows 98, Windows 2000, Windows ME, Windows XP, Windows Vista, Windows NT, Windows 2000, Windows 7, now it's Windows 8. Probably 11 or 12 iterations of the software in 15 years, and ours is the same version from 1998. It's Pac-Man. So, yeah, you have to know to go to the panel 300, whatever. So we've done a lot of work for the past year and a half looking at our current vendor and where they're going and looking at other options. If you hear me pause in using vendor names, I'm doing that on purpose. I will tell you, I've been kind of in this industry before, but I've been around these types of vendors. It's a very litigious industry. If you, there are school districts who might make a comment that says this particular vendor software doesn't, well, prove it. You know, they'll. So I'm just cautious in how I talk about these types of vendors. But you've seen some Friday updates about it coming. I just want you to be aware that the first step for us is the student. So we're going to leave HR, payroll, finance. They'll all be on terms. That'll keep running. We're going to bring in an upgraded student system that'll be web-based. The teachers can get data without having to go to a programmer and ask them to write something in COBOL to get the basic demographics for their class. There's lots of reports. They'll be able to just click and get data. We will be able to click and get data in reports without having to ask for somebody to program that. Up-to-date technologies, you might have heard of SQL and those kinds of databases. So it's up-to-date technology, web-based, lets the users get their own data. I just want to tell you that we are not, although the gradebook is included, we currently have a separate gradebook, eSimpler. Pros and cons, it's a good software. The con is you have to integrate that data nightly, get the grades and attendance out of it and put it into terms, and every 9 weeks shut the system down to print report cards. An integrated system would be one where the student information system's grade book was all one vendor. So when a teacher put in an A, the A went into the database and it's done. We are on purpose not going to implement the grade book at the beginning. And the reason for that, I've talked to lots of IT directors and lots of school districts, this is a major conversion when you switch all of your systems. Think of, since 1998, 15 years of every student's schedule, every student's attendance, discipline, records, millions of data points that we have to move from one database to another one. Our parents, our teachers, and our students are all very well educated on eSimpler. Go to any open house at any school and they're going to show you how to sign up. So what I'm telling you is we're going to get the underlying part where you schedule and where you do all the core student stuff. We're going to get that working and what we call tight. You know, it works really well without bugs. Then we will, through pilots, start turning on the grade book as that system is really good to go. So I'm just telling you we're methodically thinking through an implementation plan to reduce impact to our end users. But we actually, Ms. DeGresta just finished reviewing the contract, so we're now finishing the contract with the vendor to get all that stuff in there that she wants. We're talking about a hosted solution. So that means, for example, we have a $500,000 IBM i5 series that was bought 5 or 6 years ago, sitting back there to run just terms. Eventually, in 3 years, when we've migrated all the systems and off, we won't need that hardware. It will be, some people call it cloud. Like it's on a server somewhere else. So we're going through the contract to make sure that it's secure and that they're following the right protocols and not sharing the data and doing that kind of stuff. But we pay $30,000 a year for maintenance on that system. We have staff members who every day go back and pull out tapes, send them to the Bureau of Archives. None of that. Fully redundant system by the vendor, backed up with redundancy, hosted. So a lot of efficiencies will help free our staff up, who's already smaller in that department than most of the districts our size. So very soon you'll be seeing something come forward for the student information system. Right now it's looking about around between $500,000 and $600,000. That's the software, that's the training, that's the data migration. There's a lot of days of them coming in and migrating our data. Just for some reference, Citrus County in December of 2010 switched from terms to one of the three vendors we're looking at. And their total cost for all systems was $1.4 million, just to give you a similar district size. So this is around, I'll say, $600,000 with a recurring cost of about $75,000 a year on the student. The business will be around $100,000. Well, let's say we added services, $200,000 with a recurring cost of $75,000. So in the end, you'll have a recurring cost of about $150,000 a year. Today we're paying $167 support for our current product. So we should see a little cost savings in the yearly maintenance. But beyond that, when we switch to the gradebook, there's another $35,000 for eSimpler we don't have to pay for anymore. So as we eliminate those extra software that we have everywhere, when the business side switches, you can eliminate Winocular, all these extra software, that's when you'll see the biggest cost savings.
So part of the process has been narrowing down to get ready to bring something. How did you talk about the process, about the people you involved in getting to where you are today?
So one of the first things we did, Florida is one of the most complicated in reporting. Ask any vendor who comes to a state. If they go to California, Texas, or Florida, you have to be prepared You can't just walk in and say, I'm going to sell you a student information system. Well, do you know about our class size and FTE and all of our survey reportings? They have to build that. There's a handful of vendors that have that down pat in Florida. If you look at school districts, there's only three vendors that have more than, say, three customers in the state. There are some very big districts who can afford to buy, let's say, an Oracle, and they can put a lot of programming staff and totally maintain it, and they have the millions of dollars, but it's very few. You know, a Miami-Dade can do that. Or there are three key players, and one of them is rapidly declining in the state. I'll just put it that way. So there are two viable products who do state reporting really well. So what we've done over the past year and a half is we've brought in, it was probably 20 to 30 people, representatives from all the different departments. For example, Mr. Morrison had Charlene Atkins there, and Laura Allen from payroll, and HR. There were people from every one of the departments, teachers. We brought those in to look at the two products, and we've been doing that a year and a half total. We looked at our own product first, and then more recently, probably in the last 6 months, narrowing it down to one of these two products. Fortunately for us, we also had people like Ann Bieber and Jessica Wood come in and look at the scheduling. People like Ruth Shaw come in and look because it does adult ed reporting as well. They're message to me after seeing it was, please tell me you've bought this already. This saves us so much time in doing things. Fortunately for us, on the student side, the system that we feel, that group feels is the best, is also the most cost effective. So that is a good plus as well. But
so you're going to see something on the board agenda, but we wanted you to have an idea of what happens in the background and how long it takes to get to this point and all the people that are involved.
And what I'm sending out a Friday update about our enterprise resource, but I just wanted to make sure, you know, we're talking about starting replacing our student information system. We're going to limit the parent, we're going to keep our grade book to limit the impact to teachers, students, and parents until it's really, we're very, very comfortable and we've had lots of training. So I'm just going to be very upfront with you. Let's say we get this purchased in November, let's just say. There are many months of data migration, so we're going to wait until probably March, and at that point we'll make a decision how much we can turn on in August and how much we can't. And we're just going to do it in manageable timelines. It's something you don't want to go wrong. So we're trying to be methodical in our planning there. I don't want you to think we're going to buy it in November and, well, in February we're using. There's a lot of dual, they call it running in parallel. We'll be switching the data back and forth every night. A lot of people going. It's just a lot of data to test and verify. So,
board member, do you have any questions?
I have a question. Mm-hmm. It's just a point of curiosity, really. Miss Judy had been teaching me about the tape, you know, how you set a tape to Tallahassee, or and then you have a tape here, and then you have your what's on the server. So there's always three.
And we have one at support service, so we have four.
Oh, okay. So you always have all this data backed up somehow in case of a security issue or storm or whatever. So now that it's going to be in the cloud, what does that look like?
So let me talk to you about the first part. We have four tapes. So let's imagine we had a storm. What would I do with those tapes? In the old days, everybody had the same system.
Yeah.
And this whole thing about tapes, we used to have a contract with Osceola County. We had one where we could take our tapes and go to their IBM mainframe system and load it. They all have new, most of them have new systems now.
Yeah.
So I'll be waving our tapes around, but I won't have a $500,000 IBM iSeries server sitting next to me to put it on. So we're actually, over this three-year period, we're working with a gentleman out of Wisconsin who has an IBM data center who on a monthly you pay him a fee, and if you need to take that tape up there and boot it up, he's got the system to do it. We're looking at that. We're probably going to have to do that. Our data center has no fire suppression, period. Not even water, which would be bad. Nothing. Just saying that. There is nothing. Then, even if we took the tape to this company in Wisconsin, we load the tape up and we see our beautiful data. Well, how do we print payroll checks? Oh, that's a separate software and a separate printer. So disaster recovery is something we're focusing on. It's not easy. The beauty of having something like one of these systems hosted, they rent out server farms that have redundant servers in California and Texas. They pay them to do that, so their data is instantly backed up in two or three places with a flip of a switch. You're up and running in the web. You have, and you put that in the contract of, you know, your downtime and your recovery. But they are responsible for the disaster recovery, mm-hmm. and they do it through server farms, if you will. Suncom, there's some major, they're like fault resistant for earthquakes and redundant in three different states and that type of stuff. So yes, we have our four tapes.
That's like me having all my stuff on my floppy drives.
Yeah. Right. So just know that we're nervous, but we are trying to put things in place because this is going to be probably a 3 to 4 year conversion. You got to run the student side by side for a year, implement it for a year, run the business side by side, implement it. So to totally get off that system, we're probably talking 3 to 4 years.
Yeah, so what has changed in the industry? I know a few years ago, if we were having this conversation, the district wanted to have nothing to do with cloud. And so is it now that it's safer in terms of student data and instant accessibility when you get...
So let me clarify, because the district, and I tried to explain this before, the district has, I've always been a proponent of cloud. Let me give you an example. Performance Matters, we've had them for 10 years. Mm-hmm. It's in the cloud. It was the first product I bought here. But we contracted with Performance Matters. We thoroughly went through their data recovery, their FERPA, all that stuff. What is scary is open source cloud, meaning I'm a teacher, I'm an IT, I just go out and I get Dropbox, I go get whatever, I put all that stuff in there, and I'm not contracted with anybody. If they release my data, what's your ramification? So it's not about cloud, it's about how you implement cloud. eSimpler, Performance Matters, our student information system, are cloud-based technologies, but we have run that through legal to make sure that they're not letting that data go out of the U.S., that they're complying with FERPA. So it's more about vetting through the cloud technology to ensure that your data's safe. The fear is just using any old cloud and not really knowing where your data is, or you know, we don't even know where all of our teachers might be storing stuff. So I just, it's not an issue with cloud. We've been doing that for a long time. I'm a proponent of that. But now, in the old days, there were a lot of IT directors very reluctant to let the data go out of the data center. I understand that. And that's why you've really got to, you know, work with the legal department and make sure your contract is holding them accountable for that data. But does that answer your question?
No, because I do remember having had those conversations, and there was a lot of concern about access to student data and having student data in the cloud. And I remember when we were having those conversations, there were situations where there were companies where the company information was in the cloud, and then their provider had issues, and they couldn't access their information, and it created a lot of havoc. And so that's what I'm thinking of, is making sure, I mean, has the technology improved that much that there's a good sense of confidence that once that data is out there and it's not in a server, it's not on a tape, that there's a very small likelihood that there can be any impact on the organization if something should fail.
So I will say it is on a server. It's just on a server at their site that we're accessing through the internet. And what I will say is, when we go to eSimpler today, that's our grade book, the teachers go to the cloud to get it. The only difference is the server is back here. I will say that server is just as vulnerable as the server at XYZ company. I think the thing is making sure that the company you're contracting with has proper procedures in place to protect it as much as possible. But if anyone asked me, is anything 100% secure? Absolutely not. we've all been to some conferences lately, and 8-year-old girl with an Android or an iPad can hack the network. And I mean, so we're putting things like a network security specialist, we put that position in place. We're using the millage to put some equipment. We're trying to take the precautions, but we do stuff that's technically cloud, even though the servers are here.
Sure. So with this transition that we're doing, that does that mean then that we're not going to have any servers ourselves, or is it going to be a combination? Because one of the biggest motivators for, you know, we need a new building, is because we know that these spaces where we have all these overheating servers are not safe. And so is that going to be a continuing issue as we look forward, you know, to the future in terms of what spaces we need in those facilities?
So, and to put it in perspective, this is one of 130 servers. This one is going to be in the cloud to host our student information system.
So we still need to take care of those services.
There's, yes.
That's what I wanted to hear.
Yes. But this one, we have probably 130 servers in the district. Some of them are virtual. It might be one box that makes 8 servers, but this is one of them. It's a very expensive one because of the capacity and the horsepower it needs and the storage.
The other thing I would like to say is if you go back to IT, there's a lot of new faces. And so Bruce is building a young, dynamic team back there, and they're... we're really proud of the start that you got. The learning curve's kind of straight up for a lot of them back there in terms of things that are going on, but it's a forward-thinking group, and just have a lot of confidence that I think we've got one more person coming in.
We still have a performance data analyst coming in. You might know Brian McMahon from Sebastian River High School. Coming in as we reorganized some of our positions as he retired. We kind of reorganized some of the job descriptions, and he's going to be coming in to help us with stats and data and reports and VAM and all that kind of statistical stuff. So he just blew us away in the interview. So we're really looking forward to that in the next few weeks.
And then you're going to need a position for a translator between IT.
I know.
I was just going to word you said 15.
So you're good. When you see new student information, oh yeah, Bruce told us about it.
So Miss Johnson's laughing. She can't even turn off her ringer on her iPhone.
She's leaving the car.
So I just wanted you to be prepared. It's coming. It's a huge deal for us. It's one of our. It's our biggest thing.
It's a 3-year deal.
And it's probably a 3-year conversion.
Started.
So
did they give you a cot and a pillow to stay in the
He works well in the chair all night. I mean,
he's that's it. Really they well. Work from anywhere, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, appreciate
all right,
it.
Thank you.
Well, this is good for us. I'm sorry.
I come in on weekends a lot, and so I've been the alarm system for that computer.
Yeah.
Oh.
Other pieces of science.
Right. It smells funny. It's getting hot in here.
Something's beeping.
Right.
This has been good for us. It also lets us answer the community as to what we're doing with those dollars that they pledged to us. And, and we can say that, you know, we're not sitting on that. We're moving forward, but cautiously.
No, this is a good investment of taxpayer dollars for our teachers and student parent access to move us light years ahead.
But the caution that you're using, you know, maybe we should have had you go up and go to Washington for that first day of the health care when everything cracked in about, what was it, 40 minutes? Something like that. That very first day. So.
Well, there's been some districts with bad. If you can't pay a paycheck, it's not good. So we're starting. Our pain point is student. That's the biggest need to get data out there and state reporting. So we're starting with the most critical
and yet
side.
The time frame for switching the grade book. You said is going to be the last thing that you do, right?
No, of the students. August, but the following August.
Okay.
Now during the next school year, we'll ask some schools to pilot it.
Okay.
You know, we'll bring them on, let them start piloting and get comfortable in the following August. So it'll be the last part of the student information system. We just don't I know I've been to open houses, and I can tell you how vested our parents and community are in the e-Simbler. Mm-hmm. The parents, the students, and the teachers know this system will have all that plus more, but there's a lot of staff development and upfront notice and communication that needs to happen there, that we want to make sure we do it right the first time instead of have a bad experience with the grade book. So,
Dr. Adams, it was a good idea to put them in.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, folks. See you around. See you around the hall.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks.
Meeting adjourned.
Mr. McCain, wait, you need to stop for just one minute,
please. You may stand if you wish, sir.
Adjourned. I saw the little bangy thing go down.
Let me do it again for you.
Perhaps.